Tonight's year, June 26, 2007. Rabbi Feldman's year is being sponsored by Arlene and Michael Sand in commemoration of the yard site of Michael's father, Shmuel Yitzchak ben Shlomo Olajo.
Thank you. Suggested that maybe this week we talk a little bit about the concept of Kavod Brios, of human dignity in Halacha, and it happens to have a connection to the parasha, that's why it came to mind. What exactly is the connection? We'll get to, God willing, towards the end. So we'll come back to how it's relevant. But in general, the concept of Kavod Brios, of human dignity as a whole, has a tremendous impact on the halachic landscape. But our instinct would be just logically to assume that the halacha takes first priority, and therefore any amount of discomfort or embarrassment that might be accompanied, it doesn't matter. That's what we're asked to do. And the truth is, the pasuk in Mishlei does give us that impression. The pasuk says, "Ein eisa v'ein chachma v'ein tfuna v'neged Hashem," that if it's an opposition to Hashem, if it's against the halacha, so then there is no wisdom, there is no counsel, there is no understanding. None of those concepts come into play if it's an opposition to Hashem. And the Gemara phrase is that the makom chil Hashem ain't chokin kavod l'rav. It's a situation of a chil Hashem. Presumably, it's a reference to a situation to some kind of an avera. So then we don't give kavod to the Rav, and by inference, we don't give kavod to anybody. We don't give kavod to a person if it's in a situation of a chil Hashem, which for our purposes we'll define as some type of an active avera. So that's the starting point. That's, again, that's where you would have begun thinking that that's the way it is, that there isn't really much room for kavod brios to have an impact. And yet, the Gemara says, actually, working from there, there actually is quite a lot of space. The Gemara says, gadol kavod brios. Kavod brios is a tremendous principle. Shedocha lo safei shebetara. That it can actually push away a prohibition, push away a negative commandment. So that's the opposite of what we just said a second ago. So don't we say, yeah, in Eitzav in Chachma? So Gemara says, yeah, well, actually, we're only talking about one specific lo sasei here, and that is the lo sasei of lo sasser. And you're not supposed to deviate from that which the rabbis tell you, which, at least the way the Rambam understands it, is a reference to rabbinical commandments. So dinam derabbanan, according to the Rambam, against the Ramban, are all included in the general mitzvah and parasha shoftim of lo sasser. Says the Gemara, that's really what we're talking about. We don't mean that, as a whole, dinim d'oraisa are pushed off by kavod brios, but dinim d'rabbanan are, and that's what we mean when we say lo sasei b'tarus. So that's the first step. Then the Gemara goes on to say there actually are a few other categories as well. It comes out from that discussion. One category is called the davar shebamamon, the monetary category. What it really refers to is hashavas aved. It refers to lost property. The Gemara says if you have a zakein de'ena l'fichvozo, you have a very prominent person, and returning the lost property is going to have to take him through a process that's not in keeping with his dignity. So let's say he's the mayor from the Monopoly games. He's got a top hat and a monocle and a sash, and in order to return this property, he's got to walk through the garbage dump and crawl underneath, and by the time he gets in the end, the sash is going to be ripped and the monocle will be scratched and the hat will be squashed. So that's not l'fi chvodo. So he's exempt. When it says kavod brios, he's exempt from having to return that property. And similarly, really it's not just that, but any active commandment, anything that you have to do, that's the way we'll term it for now. What the Gemara calls it a sheva al taisif. It means that you just would violate it passively. You would sit back and not do something. So then again, kavod brios wins. Apparently, even on a biblical level, if it's a question of just passively omitting something, which is a rough translation, it's a little bit of a discussion in the Achronim how to translate this, but we'll take the easiest way out for now, that if it's a matter of just sitting back passively, so then kavod brios again is going to win. So what do you see from the Gemara? You see that even though normally the baseline is Ein Eitzav Ein Chachma, but Kavod Brios is a very powerful category that can overwhelm at least three areas, the areas of Drabanan, the areas of Hashavas Aved, and really the area of all passive ideas, of all or active, depending on how you look at passive violations of active responsibilities. So those three categories emerge from the Gemara. There are also three controversial categories. The three categories that are topics of debate and kind of emerge from one side in the machlokes. For example, one of the things that you see from the Gemara is that Kavod Abrias applies to Tumas Kohanim. That if you have a mace mitzvah in the situation of somebody who, say, have a Kohen, Kohen's not really supposed to be involved with funerals, not supposed to touch a mace, but if a Kohen finds a situation where he, if he doesn't get involved with the burial, no one else is going to do it. So that's called a mace mitzvah. If no one is going to take care of the mace mitzvah, so then the Kohen has to do it. So this is overcomes. This overcomes Tumas Kohanim. There was a whole article was written about this, and we'll talk about that at a different point. At least that's the din of the Gemara, that a Kohen or a Nazir is going to be Metameh if it's in a situation of Meis Mitzvah, which presumably, although this is a little bit of a discussion as well, as the whole Arsa Mask about this, that's presumably an extension of Kavod Abrius, that here we're worried about the human dignity of the one who passed away. Rashatha likes to point out that people think that Kavod Ames is a concept that you can treat a person terribly his whole life, and then when he dies, so all of a sudden there's a concept of Kavod Ames that comes out of nowhere. Kavod Ames is an extension of Kavod Achaim. Kavod Abrius is supposed to treat people well all the time, and even when they're not alive any longer to feel the problem. So it's not that it's a new concept that comes as soon as they die, all of a sudden you have to start treating them respectfully. It's an extension of Kavod Abrius that you have to treat them well when they're alive, and even after they're no longer alive to appreciate. So Kavod Abrius is an extension of the basic Kavod Abrius, and apparently since that's at risk if no one's going to take care of the burial, so the Kohen has to do it. So as Tosfos does, my focus apparently between Rashi and Tosfos, this doesn't fit any of the rules. Right? This is an active violation of Torah law. For a Kohen to be Mutame is an active violation of Torah law. There's no passive there, there's no drabbanan. So how does that work? So according to Rashi, it seems Rashi and Mesachus Brachos, that this is not a function of Kavod Abrius overwhelming anything. This is a clause in the rules of Tumas Kohanim. The Tumas Kohanim doesn't apply when it's a mace mitzvah. It's just a detail in that existing halacha, and it's not any part of this process of one halacha overwhelming the other. But Tosfos understands it differently. Tosfos understands that Kavod Abrius is coming and winning here. So how does it win if it doesn't follow any of the rules? So what emerges from Tosfos is that you have another category here, a fourth category. What's the fourth category? So if you have an Isser, let's say it's a biblical prohibition, but it's a weakened prohibition. It's not on the same level as a standard prohibition. What do we mean by that? So Tumas Kohanim could fall into a category of a weakened prohibition because there's something the Gemara calls Lav Sheino Shav Lakal. It doesn't apply to everybody. Right? It applies only to a small percentage of the Jewish population. Right, it only applies to males, first of all, and only a small percentage of males, so it's a pretty small percentage of the overall Jewish population. So that's called a lav sheino shav lakol, which you find sometimes in certain discussions the Gemara has a little bit of a lower status, a little bit of a weaker effect. So that's the case. That's what Tosfos suggests. It's here, this Isser, it's as if it's not on the same level of authority as a standard prohibition, and therefore Kavod Abrius could win over that. So this is interesting because it applies also to a Nazir. To a Nazir being Matame, you have the same idea. So you might say, well, yeah, Nazir is also in a Shavu Lakol. How many Nazirim do you know? Many more Kohanim than there are Nazirim. That's actually not the appropriate category because really Nazir is Shavu Lakol because anyone could decide to become a Nazir. So I happen to not be a Nazir at the moment, but the issue of a Nazir being Matame applies to me. It just happens not to be relevant today, but in theory I could become a Nazir. So therefore the concept of Nazir is not considered to be a lav sheino shav lakol. That does apply to everybody. It applies to men and to women. But it has a weaker component to it also because it's efshir b'she'elah, that in theory one could go to a beis din, one could go to a chacham and say, listen, I made a mistake. I accepted upon myself Nazirus, and for whatever reason I deserve to have it undone, and in theory it can be undone. Well, if a guy decides he has a tremendous yearning for a pork sandwich, he can go to all the bate din in the world. No one's going to be able to undo that for him. So that, again, makes it a little bit weaker. The fact that in theory it could be undone, which is certainly not the case by a normal prohibition. So that also puts it in this weaker category. So says Tosus, these we can discern, Kavod HaBrios is going to win. So that's a new category. That's a fourth category you could add into the mix. Fifth category, it's also controversial. It's also a topic of debate. The Gemara says, you want an example of something that's not going to give over to Kavod HaBrios. Kavod HaBrios is not going to win. For one example of a biblical prohibition that's straight out, the Gemara says, let's say you're walking around the street and you happen to look inside your garment and you see your garment has a label in there that says 100% pure shadness. So shadness is a biblical prohibition. It's active. Therefore, for all of that, so the Gemara says Kavod HaBrios is not going to win here. This is one of the cases where Kavod HaBrios can't control. So therefore, poshtan ve'afilu b'shuk, you have to take it off, even if it's in a public place, and even if it's not so b'chavadik, it's a biblical prohibition, and that's what you're stuck with. So that's an example, again, of Kavod HaBrios not winning. But there is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh about the following scenario. Let's say it's not that you noticed it in your own clothing, but let's say you're walking down the street and there's somebody walking in front of you, and you happen to notice that on his back it says a big sign on the back of his shirt says Great American Shotness Company. So he doesn't know. He doesn't look at the back of his shirt. He just put it on. He didn't happen to look in the back. So what should you do? So according to the Rambam, it sounds like you got to tell him, take it off right now. And according to the Rush, what you could probably do is you could say, listen, Joe, do me a favor, run home, and I'm going to call you as soon as you get home. And then when he's safely home, you call him and say, listen, you got to change that shirt, you got a shot in this problem. So in other words, you know, some debate over what the issue here is. What seems to be going on is the element of shogeg. That since the guy doesn't know, so you would have to tell him in order to evoke the situation. So that's a topic of a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh. It sounds like from the Rambam, if this is what we base the issue on, which is the way many understand it, that it doesn't help the fact that it's shogeg. You have to tell them and take care of it. And according to the Rosh, if it's the shogeg, you have somewhere to work with, and you can let Kavod HaBrios come in and become the dominant factor and take care of it as soon as possible to balance it. This in theory comes up with the Tumas Kohanim issue also. Post, even though here again we have this postal saying that Tumas Kohanim does win for Kavod HaBrios does win for Tumas Kohanim. Nonetheless, Post can talk about the question. Let's say somebody passes away in a building and there's a Kohen who's sleeping and he's not wearing anything. So you're going to have to tell him to get up and jump out of the house, or you tell him, listen, get dressed, I have to tell you something. So that's a question, again, that Post can talk about in light of this question of how Kavod HaBrios plays a role. That's a fancy thing. So the Rosh Hashanah Rabbin was no Arab, and you happen to notice the plow in his palace. Yes. He's very observant. You happen to notice the pastel. In theory, he already knows there's no Arab. He just thinks that his palace is, in theory, you should tell him. Whether or not it's really Nisa Daraisa or not, is, whether even Kavod HaBrios comes into play there is also a question. I mean, it's Talos, probably not so much of a Kavod HaBrios issue. In general, whether you tell people the Erev is down or not is a complicated topic. You're saying he already knows there's no Erev, and Pasha is just down.
Hi. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. So that gets into certain. So it sounds like from the Gemara, like you're supposed to take it off him. You know, how exactly you do that in a contemporary society is, you know, not something we're going to get into. In theory, that's what the Gemara is talking about. How you would handle it in the society where it's not shy for you to do that is. In theory, you have this issue of mutav shu shogin ve'ayu mezid, and it's better for people to sin inadvertently than to sin inadvertently, although there is a possibility that you don't say that by things that are explicit in Chumash. It's a little bit of a complicated discussion. It's a tricky point. Try not to notice. In any event, this emerges as another controversial category, the question of something that's the shogeg, so Kavod HaBrios, or not, that apparently is also dependent on the Machlokas HaRishon. So another topic that is subject to a Machlokas HaRishon, and that is the Chiddush that was suggested in Tshuvas Maharsha Engel, if I remember correctly, when the Devei Chaim talks about this, one or the other, we both talk about it, I forgot which one suggested it. The question is, what if you have something that's really an Issur D'oraisa, but it's not explicit in Chumash? So there are some Achronim who say that even if it's D'oraisa and it's an Issur, but it's not explicit in Chumash, so then Kavod HaBrios again is going to win. And there are some that say for the Mudei Hashem, he suggests that this was the view of the Rambam as well, because the Rambam writes that if you have somebody who's, let's say, in the middle of shaving, he's halfway from the shaving, and he hears that a relative of his passed away, he hears Shemes Lameis, the Rambam says he can finish it because of Kavod HaBrios, because it's such a bizarrion for him to walk around half shaving, and that's not regular, and therefore he's allowed to finish shaving. Now, there's point out that this is true even though, according to the Rambam, against the vast majority of Rishonim, but the Rambam is of the opinion that Avelus Yom Rishon, that the first day of Avelus and Aninus, is Daraisa. So apparently it's really awesome and Atorah for him to shave at that point. And nonetheless, the Rambam allows it for Kavod HaBrios. So here's some Achronim, like Limud Hashem explained, that yeah, it's technically, according to Rambam, it's a Daraisa, but it's not the Feirush in Chumash. It doesn't say anywhere in Chumash, don't shave during Avelus. So what it does is it comes out of some broader concept of Avelus. So even if the authority is in Torah, the Pasuk itself doesn't say this. It sounds like it's a direct contradiction to something that you find in a verse in the Torah. So what we have now is then three categories that are from the Gemara. The Rabbanan's returning lost property and Sheva Taisa, and three categories that are controversial that are the topic of debate. Either weakened Yisurim and Shogeg and things that are not explicit in Chumash. So what's going on here? So how do you explain all these different positions? So I think the fundamental question you could ask is, how exactly do you understand this process? What are the mechanics? How does it work? But on the one hand, right? Halacha takes priority. And then on the other hand, somehow Kavod HaBrios comes in and wins under certain circumstances. So in those circumstances, where it works, how does it work? So we could say that basically it's just a question of conflicting values. That you have a value of Kavod HaBrios, and you have a competing halacha, whatever it is. And there's a clash. You have two things that are up against each other, and you have to pick which one's going to win. So apparently, Kavod HaBrios ranks very high on the scale. Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, so Kavod HaBrios ranks 9. So it'll win against a lot of things. It won't win against the Chil Hashem, against the Issur D'oraisa. So that's the most powerful. That's a 10. So it's not going to win against the 10. But maybe a positive commandment in HaTorah, say Sheva Taisa, that's a 7. And maybe a Drabanan, that's a 6. So therefore, maybe Kavod HaBrios being a 9, it's a powerhouse that can knock down a lot of things. But the basic, except for the Issur D'oraisa, D'oraisa is going to still win because of its being rooted in the Chil Hashem. But other than that, it's going to win against everything else. So if that's the case, how would we look at the controversial issues if we use this approach? So, for example, weakened Yisurim. So if we follow this approach, maybe we would agree with Tosfos that weakened Yisurim should also lose to Kavod HaBrios. Because maybe an Issur by itself is 10, but if it's weakened, so it's an 8 or a 7. Weakened, you know, by definition, probably moves it lower on the scale. So Kavod HaBrios could win when it's weakened. What about Shogeg? My focus around them in a rush. So probably here also we know that Shogeg usually takes a bite a little bit out of an Aveira. An Aveira done by Shogeg needs to be atoned on some level, but it's not punishable the same way. So probably also an Aveira by Shogeg goes down from a 10 to whatever, a 7. So again, maybe Kavod HaBrios will win. But the issue of Yisurim that are not explicit, so then maybe Kavod HaBrios would still lose, because the power, the authority is the same. So presumably it should still be a 10. It's So the fact that it's not explicit in the Chumash maybe doesn't make so much of a difference. So maybe that issue, the Achronish suggestion that maybe non-explicit Yisurim are going to lose, so maybe you won't accept it. Maybe that's how this approach would take us. Now you could suggest another approach. You could look at things differently. You could look at things in a way that are going to give you a whole different reading. Then maybe you could say that the question is as follows. That perhaps the idea is, and this, the Rashi like this, and some Sofer, various sources that lead you to this type of thinking. Let's start from the example of Hashavah Saved, of returning lost property. So I find somebody's wallet, I have to return it, unless it's somehow not in keeping with my dignity. So how could that work? Doesn't this guy have the right to get his wallet returned? How can he lose out on his rights? So the assumption seems to be, the way some understand it, that even though he has the right to get his wallet back, we can be confident in assuming that he would be mochel this right, that he would choose not to get his wallet back, if getting it back meant I had to be mevazeh myself. So we could assume that he holds Chavra Brias in such esteem, that if the only way for him to get his wallet back is for me to be mevazeh myself, he doesn't want it. That's hopefully an assumption we can bank on. So if that's true, so then you can build from that to the other categories also. So you have an Issa de Rabbanan. So what makes an Issa de Rabbanan work as far as Kavod HaBrius outweighing it? So maybe again it's the same idea that why do you keep the Rabbanan? It's the whole discussion of itself. Maybe the idea of following Din de Rabbanan is Kavod to Chazal. So Chazal are willing to be mochel on their Kavod. They're willing to say it's okay in order to protect the Kavod of the individual. So the same way the owner of the wallet says I'll be mochel, so too the Chazal also said they'll be mochel on their covet in order to protect the covet of the individual. The problem is, if you keep following this idea that it's mechila, that it's the core of everything, so then you get to the point, you get to a positive mitzvah min HaTorah, that means that apparently the Kadosh Baruch Hu is also mochel. So that's a very difficult idea to understand. Why should the Kadosh Baruch Hu be mochel? If we know that, what's at the root of covet abrius? As the Pasuk in Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis, right? Because Baruch Hu says he's creating humanity in the image of God. So human beings are created the Tzelem Elokim. So therefore, by honoring people, it's a way of honoring the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hi?
This is triggers the idea. I think, did you discuss this one time before?
Possibly.
In the Sota episode,
mm-hmm. Let the name be erased. Yeah, that I think I talked about recently. Right, so that's just covered, or that's something else. But that we could understand more easily, perhaps. You know, there that saying that Shalom is such an imperative that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to take whatever steps to allow Shalom. It's similar. It's similar, but this is a little bit coming from a different direction. That here we're talking about for the covet of an individual, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is apparently willing to be mochel his covet. But if the idea is that being the mechabed individuals, that's a way of being mechabed of Kadosh Baruch Hu, so why don't we cut out the middleman? Right, why should we say, okay, I'll respect this person so that I can, therefore that reflects back on God, when I have an opportunity to respect God directly? You fulfill the mitzvah, you respect God directly. So to say, well, I'll skip the mitzvah so I can respect the person because the person reflects back on Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's an indirect route. Right, somebody was asking last week about the Gemara Menachos, about the Tchelos. Where Tchelos? Because Tchelos is like the ocean looks like the sky. The sky looks like the Kisei HaKavod. So why do you have to go in so many steps? You cut out the middleman. So why don't you have something that, why don't we respect God directly? Oh, okay, so that's far as Tchelos is concerned. Right, but back to this question of Kavod, so why don't we do the mitzvah and respect Kadosh Baruch Hu directly? So that's where it comes into this week's parasha. There's an interesting medrash in Parashas Balak. That here you have this whole episode with the donkey. So this donkey that outsmarted the archenemy of the Jewish people, so we would think that that would be the greatest exhibit in the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum of Miracles. Right here, great enemy of the Jews is outsmarted by a donkey. This would be a great great exhibit in the museum. And yet the Medrash says no, because Baruch Hu Dafka went the opposite direction. He made sure that this donkey shouldn't be around anymore. Why? Because it was a bizayin to Bilam, because of the covet of Bilam.
And then the Medrash forgot to say, you see how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu worries about the kavod, even of a Rasha, you know, even of our bad guy. So all the more so for normal people, you should worry about the kavod. So here you really have a very direct example. Because this is something that could be glorious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet, you're taking the step of preferring the kavod of an individual and a rather unsavory individual. Why would we make such a decision? So the truth is, to try to find some kind of an approach here, you could say that this has to do with the nature of kavod as a whole. And this could have something to do with a topic that Bali Musar discussed, which you could call the paradox of the Baal Gaiva. The Baal Gaiva really lives kind of a lousy life. He should have Rachmanis. Baal Gaiva, you think he's having fun. Baal Gaiva is really having a kind of a difficult existence, because as Rabbi Shrestha put it once, so here the Baal Gaiva doesn't hold from anybody else. He thinks he's the greatest, nobody else is important. But he's got to pretend like he holds from you for a minute in order to take cover from you. Because the truth is, if he doesn't really hold from you, so what good is your honoring him? You're not important. You know, somebody who doesn't know anything comes up to you and says, I think what you're saying is great. So like, yeah, you don't know anything, so you know, what does that mean? So your covet is only meaningful when it comes from somebody who you think knows what they're talking about, you think is worth something. So here the Baal Gaiva, who lives really a very futile life, he doesn't think anybody else is important. But in order to be honored by those people who he doesn't think is important, so he's got to pretend for a minute like he does think they're important. It's not really a way to live. And it could be that perhaps that's what the Mishnah means in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Ezehu Mechubad HaMechabed Esabrios. Who is it who is honored? He who honors people. So we could see that as kind of a reciprocal deal. You respect me, I'll respect you. But it could be, and I think Rabbi Yonah says something like this, it could be more fundamental, that the only people in this world who can really get covered are people who first are Mechabed others. But if you don't think anybody else is worthwhile, so then there's nobody for you to get covered from. It's only people who genuinely think other people are important and other people are deserving of covered that then if they choose to be mechabed you, it's meaningful. But if you don't think that, then there's no source of covered for you to get. So that's a principle, that's a basic yesod in covered that is unusual, that covered is basically built on mechila. The more you are mochel covered to the next person, the more they can be mechabed you. And the less covered you have for them, the less there is to bounce back to you. It builds upon itself. So therefore, it really does make sense for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be mochel his covered to his creation. Because the more his creations are honorable, the more the honor that they show back to Shemayim is significant. So, a bizayin, a chil Hashem, so that we can't allow. So, mochel chil Hashem, that we can't count. But if it's just a choice of missing an opportunity, so we'll miss an opportunity for kavod here, but by increasing the kavod that a human being has, ultimately that kavod goes back upstairs. Ultimately that kavod traces back to Shemayim, so it is a good investment. So it could be understood that even though we're not going to allow an active disgrace to Hashem, we're not going to allow an active chil Hashem, but missing an opportunity could still be a good investment. The Kadosh Baruch Hu might be mochel on his kavod for the kavod of an individual, even one such as Bilam. Hi.
The
Gemara doesn't actually explain what that's about, whether that's an idea of Mechila and Kavod. There's actually a question, it's funny, I've just actually seen this today, that somebody once suggested, how do you know, see that undermines these things, someone says that, how do you know, the Gemara says from there that, G'dolah kach nasrach amet bos neshkina, but Avram decided to leave Kodesh Baruch Hu to go greet his guests. So if someone says that, asks, how do you know from there? Maybe he asked for shus. Maybe he said, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you take priority, but these guys are here. Can I step out for a minute? So maybe there's no riot from there. So that would have been a proof that Kodesh Baruch Hu might want to cover. So the safer point of that, the fact that Avram ran out right away, even though he does tell Machlokas Megemara whether which is totally on, when he says, Adoni, wait, so that word, whether that's Hashem or whether he's referring to the guest. The guest should wait, or Kodesh Baruch Hu should wait. So somebody told Kodesh Baruch Hu to wait. And while he goes out to see his guest. So that Gemara says from there that it's better to be Mekabel Orchem than be Mekabel Pnei Shechina. couple of other things, but there's a lot of discussion on what exactly that lean would mean. But in any case, so the point is whether it means that a kosher was actively mokel, or that that's part of the din, it's a whole separate discussion. But in any event, so the point to me is that's a lot to say about that, that's separate from this. But in any event, so it seems that Kadosh Baruch Hu was mochel on his covet, so why is he mochel on his covet? So maybe because that this way the covet then traces back to him, it all comes back upstairs. Hi.
Couldn't you conceptualize Kavod HaBriyos partly in terms of Kavod Hashem, so that you not only look at the impression of others vis-a-vis or the person who is the subject of who is in a situation where Kavod HaBriyos applies, and you look at the impression that person makes upon, let's say, a non-Jew. You say, what kind of a silly religion is this where people have to
yes and no. I mean, yes, I hear the logic where you're coming from, but the problem is it's difficult a little bit to draw the line because, you know, since there are these points where we say you do have to do it despite that, and as a whole, we generally have a principle that the fulfillment of the halacha we don't consider it to be, you know, by definition, an embarrassing point. So it's difficult to know where you're going to draw the line as far as saying that the halacha itself, you know, the kol Hashem are being fulfilled. Usually it's going to be the opposite, you know, that that fulfilling the halacha is the kiddush Hashem and failing to is the kol Hashem. It's only when it's the external circumstances that kind of complicate things. So to say the general rule that it would be a kol Hashem to carry out, sometimes yes, it's not going to answer up everything. I think that's a little, even as much as that may be factored into the equation on some level, some questions it's not going to answer. If we take this path and we say that basically that's the idea, that there's mechila going on, and that in general the covet is always recommended that it should be forgiven to the lower source, except Hitzchul Hashem, and this one time we don't allow it. So then to go back to our controversial questions, so if an Aveira is weakened, so how would you say? So we'd probably come out like Rashi, that it doesn't make a difference, because a weakened Isser is still an active Isser, and that's what Hashem we're not going to allow. What if it's the Shogeg? So again, it'd probably come out like the Rambam, it's still an active prohibition. But if it's not explicit in the Chumash, maybe there's room to be lenient there, because maybe the idea is that if it's not explicit in the Chumash, so it's not really a Chil Hashem, because nobody can open up the Chumash and say, look, what you're doing is against this. It happens to be, authoritatively it comes back to the Torah, but it's not something anyone can open up their art scroll and say, this is against that. So maybe there's room to come to a different conclusion. But basically, we're almost out of time, so we'll try to talk tomorrow. But basically, these two approaches could take us down two different routes as far as understanding how this goes. Just mention maybe one more illustration just to make the point. The Gemara in the Maseches Shavuos talks about the fact that if you have, let's say you have the head of the Sanhedrin, you have the highest rabbinical court judge in the world, and he gets called up by a very low-level court to testify. There's a situation where he needs to come to testify in a court that's significantly lower in front of judges who will be far lower ranking than he is. So even though that doesn't sound to be so dignified for him, nonetheless he's got to do it anyway. So Tosfos raises the question, why does he have to do it? If he would just stay home, that would be passive. And Kavod HaBriyos, his dignity is being compromised by coming into this lower court. So he's being subpoenaed, and why can't he say that I'm not going to come? No, I'm going to stay home. Shave your ties. It's not b'kidichlodi. So Tosfos has two answers. One answer is that it's a situation where he won't be doing anything wrong, but somebody else will do an Aveira. An Aveira will happen through somebody else because of his failure to testify. So basically there will be an active Aveira because he's not coming to clear up things, and therefore it's a situation of active testimony power. And that suggests that maybe the Isser really is again Chil Hashem. The Chil Hashem is happening somewhere even if you're not the one doing it. The other answer is instructive for the other approach. The other answer is an important principle here. The other answer suggests that maybe we should distinguish between different types of embarrassment. I think Tosfos uses the expression Gnai Katan and the Gnai Gadol. Is a big disgrace, is a little disgrace. You know, there are some things that are humiliating, and there are some things that are, oh, it's not so b'chavadik. So for him to come to this lower court, it's not humiliation, it's not a scandal. it's not a disgrace. Okay, it's not really fitting the protocol. It's not the way things normally happen. Okay, it's not ideal, but it's not a disgrace. So maybe this is following the idea of the value chart that Kavod HaBrios is a 9 when it's maximized. If it's really embarrassing, then it's a 9. But in theory, you can have a situation that impacts on Kavod, but not all the way. You know, that's it's a 3. Then it's not the way you would have done things ideally. But it's not humiliating, so that doesn't rank as high up on the chart. It's not all or nothing. Maybe there's different points. And Gnai Cotton would maybe have different rules. Hi. How do you know where it's drawn is a good question. So that apparently has some level of subjectivity about it. There are long tshuvas about this, and the tshuvas is the Yitzchak Blazer. And the tshuvas for Yitzchak in the end of the first chaluk, and Hayin and Rav and Zayin, tshuvas in the end, he's got long discussions about how exactly the subjective, objective, how exactly you figure that out. This whole point Gnai Cotton kind of really talks about. It's a fair question. How do you draw a line? So we don't know exactly how. But in theory, just at least to answer the theory from the Gemara, you know, the Gemara is presenting this case, and they say, well, why is that not called the Kavod HaBrios situation? So here Tosfos is telling us this Yisod, that maybe it's not always, it's not all or nothing. The big things, yes, and the small things, maybe less. So just to quickly chazen, and time we have left, about what we spoke about the fact that even though the premise is Ein Eitz of Yechachlin Yitzchulam Magad Hashem, that Mokom Chul Hashem, we don't give Kavod to anybody, but the Gemara says the three exceptions, Dinam Darabanan, returning lost property, and passive ideas. And then from Rishonim, we see three other categories, Machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos that weaken the Yisurim, like Tumas Kohen and Tumas Nazir, which are either Inoshav Lakal or possible to be have Mechila. And the second category was Shogeg, Machlokas Ram the Rash, and the third category is Machlokas Achronim, about things that are not explicit in the Chumash, which may be perhaps the view of the Rambam. So we discussed two different ways to understand this. Either it's a values clash with the Kavod HaBrios being a 9 and the Yisurim D'oraisa being a 10, but everything else being somewhere lower on the scale. So therefore, maybe Shogeg Kavod HaBrios wins, we can Yisurim Kavod HaBrios wins, but things that are from Chumash, you don't have not explicit Kavod HaBrios loses. And the other approach was Mechila, that just like the owner of the lost property will be Mochel rather than the Mevaz of somebody else, so too the Chazal are also Mochel and Din Rabbanan, but then Akash Baruch apparently is also Mochel, which is surprising because if we are Mechabit people and already Mechabit Yeron Shalom, so why don't we cut out the middle man? So we found this expiration that Akash Baruch Hu chose to worry about Bilam's Kavod rather than to impress people with the donkey in the museum. So here also the idea seems to be that maybe Kavod is something that builds itself on the chila, that you only get covered by the mochel to the lower source of Gnabi Mechabiju. If there's no cover for the people, then the people have really nothing with which to honor you. And maybe that's what Ezeh Mechubar Mechabiju Esabrios means. And if so, then if everything is basically Mechil except for a Bizayin, for a Chol Hashem, so then maybe Shogeg and we can discern, we still wouldn't allow because it's still active discern. But not fair to the Chumash, maybe that's less of a maybe that's less of an active Chil Hashem type of idea. And we're just doing this other example of Tosfos and Shuas that says how come the higher court Beis Din Dayan has to come testify in front of a lower Beis Din? So either because there will be an Issur Din through his failure to testify, or because we don't always see all these things as equal. There are different levels of design. There's a Gnai Cotton and a Gnai Gadol, a big disgrace and a small disgrace, and therefore for a small disgrace, maybe not. And that also reflects on this idea that maybe being a point system, so to speak, a value system in which Kavod HaBrios could rank very high if it's maximized, but if it's only a little bit of a not so b'chavid situation, then the rules might be different. Alright, so we will stop here. Again, you know, we're reading the parsha about coverage of Bilam, it's not California, it's coverage of all the rest of us. Chances are the people you'll be dealing with are not going to be as bad as Bilam. So I can feel free to apply the Kavachomer in its full sense. And should have a wonderful week.